Evident Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour. We got a couple of minutes late start, but we're here. And as you know, this sometimes occurs on Internet radio, especially because we are not controlled by machines like the mainstream media is. And so when we have something to say, we say it. Welcome to the show on this August the 6th on the West Coast, now August the 7th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. I'm going to jump right into tonight's show. We've had this guest on way back when the show first started. I was on another network, and I was very fortunate to have this gentleman come on board and share much of his research. He is a professional journalist of extraordinary talent, very gifted. I admire his work and his approach to communicating what he has uncovered. He himself will tell you that this is very difficult work, researching something where everything is hidden. And so you've got to find the first piece of evidence and then keep connecting them. That's why we call this Evident Footprints, because those of us who do this type of research look for footprints and fingerprints and whatever clues that will lead us to a place where we can find facts and begin connecting the dots and figure out what the heck is going on in this world. This gentleman is a prolific author, and he has also written for mainstream media as a newspaper reporter. He's one of these roll-up-your-sleeves kind of guys, likes to wear a fedora. I've never seen him in a Panama hat, but he may have one or two of those hiding somewhere in the wings. He's recently written a book called The Rise of the Fourth Reich, and we talked about this on his last appearance. He's going to be with us twice this month of August, and I want to welcome him back to Evident Footprints, and we're going to have a very in-depth and lively discussion about the players behind the scenes. I welcome again to Evident Footprints, Mr. Jim Mars. Jim, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Don. It's a pleasure to be with you.
It's a pleasure to have you. So, now, we're going to play complimentary ping pong here.
So we're going to have a pleasant time.
Yeah. What a subject that you've written about. And as you well know, I'm very interested in that subject myself, that my current research is kind of paralleling what you're doing. And I think when one gets to the bottom of what's going on and you find the truth is the truth, and it doesn't matter what anyone says about it, you can't refute it.
Well, that's absolutely right. And once you pull up one of the threads and start following the evidence, it does tend to lead to the same place. The thing that excites me, and the reason I think people should read The Rise of the Fourth Reich, is that I think almost every thinking person in the United States today understands and agrees that the country has gotten off on the wrong path somehow. But the problem is nobody quite knows who to point the finger to. The liberals blame the conservatives, the conservatives blame the liberals, the Democrats blame the Republicans blame the Democrats, and it goes round and round. I think what we'll find is, and if you'll read the material that I present in The Rise of the Fourth Reich, we find that one of the greatest secrets of the 20th century is that while the Allied nations defeated Germany in World War II, we really, truly did not defeat the Nazis. And Nazi is a abbreviation, an acronym for National Socialism. And that is what Hitler was pushing. And what we find is that there were plenty of people in the West who agreed with the principles of National Socialism. In fact, Winston Churchill said something to the effect of he just didn't want Germany to be running the world. He said we're not against National Socialism, and this proved very true in the wake of World War II when many prominent Americans such as Prescott Bush, the Rockefellers, John J. McCloy, who had been head of the City National Bank, which is now Citicorp, Alan Dulles, John Foster Dulles, who were the attorneys for the Schroeder Bank, which was the bank which processed the money that supported Hitler, and then, of course, Prescott Bush, who became a prominent senator from Connecticut and who was a official of Union Banking Corporation, another supporter of Hitler. In fact, Prescott Bush, in late 1942, halfway in World War II, was actually prosecuted by the federal government of the United States for being nothing more than a financial front man for Hitler and the Nazis. And these people, at the very top of the American power structure, after the war, brought thousands of unreconstructed Nazis into the United States under Operation Paperclip and several other programs, rolled them into our national security apparatus, the military. We know that it was German scientists who built our rocket program and our that then evolved into the Apollo missions, the moon missions, became NASA. And what is not generally known is that they also brought their mind control experts over here, and they lay at the heart of the MK-Ultra mind control experiments of the CIA. And, of course, all this got started back in the 50s when Alan Dulles was the longest-running director of the CIA, and Alan Dulles had been an integral part of all this since the creation of Hitler back in the early 30s. So what we see is that although we defeated the Germans, National Socialists were brought in this country, and a National Socialist program was pushed in this country for many years, gaining traction with the Richard Nixon administration. Nixon was put into office by Nazi money. And then he appointed Prescott Bush's son, George Herbert Walker Bush, as head of the Republican National Committee. And between them, they began to roll these Nazis into the Republican Party. And basically what they've done is the same thing they did in Germany. They have appealed to the conservatism of middle class and portrayed themselves as the standard bearers of conservatism. But what we find today in what is called neoconservatism, or the neocons, that his son, George W. Bush, who is the current president, has been pushing ever since 2000, is his neoconservatism is actually nothing more than National Socialism. The acronym of National Socialism, of course, is Nazi.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm inclined to agree with everything you said. I might add the importance of the Galen organization, Reinhard Galen.
Right.
And Otto Skorzeny produced recent pictures of Galen and talked quite a bit how, and I may have mentioned this to you on a past show, how the Bushes were sent here as the sheriffs, and they were working for Hitler directly to spy on Nikola Tesla. And that when they did the Philadelphia experiment, the Utrons, there were three on the ship that they were trying to transport, teleport from one place to another, and they had actually gotten on the ship while all this chaos was going on. The experiment went awry, and they were able to steal two of the Utrons. Skorzeny said they weighed about 80 pounds each, so Galen took one, and he took one, and they got those back to Hitler. And these types of activities went on all throughout Tesla's career, but he emphasized the fact that at the end of the war, when all of this exchange of these Nazi spies was taking place under Operation Paperclip, what they referred to as Odessa, they also had a sort of a dual contract with Galen, that Galen worked for what was becoming the CIA at the time in 1947, which you alluded to, and it was also working for the KGB. So they would take bad intel from Galen, which he would give them on behalf of the Russians, and I'm sure he was doing the same thing on the other side, giving the Russians bad intel about the U.S. But somebody
They played both ends against the middle, which is their standard operating procedure. We see that going on in the current presidential election. You've got Barack Obama, whose primary advisors are Zygmunt Brzezinski and his son of the Trilateral Commission. And then, of course, behind McCain is Henry Kissinger and the Council on Foreign Relations. The Trilateral Commission is merely an offshoot of the Council on Foreign Relations, and they're all working for the same goal, which is a one-world socialist government.
Yes. Now, of course, there are some corporate entities that fall into there, too. The Carlyle Group.
But you have to understand that Mussolini, who is credited with coining the term fascism, because that comes from his black-shirted fascistas, okay, and their emblem was the fasces, or the axe bundled together with sticks, which signifies central authority, central government. And Mussolini himself, and I quote him in my book, The Rise of the Fourth Reich, said that fascism probably is not the correct term, that in its earliest forms it really should be called corporatism. So you have to understand that the key to it is corporate control. In Nazi Germany and in fascist Italy, the state gained control over the corporations, and it was that blending of state and corporate power, which is the very dictionary definition of fascism. In modern America, the corporations have gained control over the state, but the end result is the same.
Yes. Well, I was alluding to the fact that you have these monstrosities of the corporate alliances, if you want to call it that, the Carlyle Group and Halliburton, which is nothing but a monopoly and money laundering schemes, and concerted organized theft of public funding, and on and on. I mean, it's just it's raping the economy, and this is done intentionally. They know what they're doing.
Absolutely, and I don't think we need provide any more proof than the simple fact that the United States is a very wealthy nation. We still have many, many national resources. Plus, we have a educated workforce that has produced goods and services and made the United States the pride of the world. And yet, having said that, we look today and we see our economy is stripping gears and falling apart.
Yes.
Why would it be doing that unless there was systematic looting of the system?
Mm-hmm. Good point. Now, and I know you're not expecting an answer on that, because I would go on for the rest of the show. So, and you know that as well as
right.
The listening audience. Who do you see at the root of all of this? Now, I'm going to honor the fact too that you have also written books about the supernatural events that are going on the planet, and I don't have to mince words. You've written about an alien presence on this planet, an alien presence around the planet, and you are world renowned for your work in that area. Bottom line, who do you see pulling the strings?
Well, it depends on at which level you want to stop.
Okay.
But you obviously want to know who's at the top of the food chain. And that's also, that's been my desire, and that's why I produced a book back in 2000 called Rule by Secrecy, about the people who are trying to rule this planet through secrecy and deceit, okay? And they do this largely through what I call secret societies. Now, of course, the Trilateral Commission, the Bilderbergers, the Council on Foreign Relations, these are not secret to the extent that nobody knows about them, of course, because they have websites, they have offices, they obviously are out front. I call them secret societies because you and I, and probably no one listening, can join. They are very particular. They carefully screen their membership for people who would only adhere to their worldview. And their worldview is they want to create a world that is basically one world socialist programs. However, they don't want truly one world socialism because then they wouldn't be able to play off one nation or one economic bloc off against another to produce the tension that provides them with power and control and wealth. So I think that what we'll see is the actual game plan was probably laid out in 1948 by the publication of a book entitled 1984. It was written by George Orwell, which is a pen name for a Britisher named Eric Blair. And Blair was very well connected into the British aristocracy and into the media, and he was a Fabian socialist, and I think he really had a pretty good idea on what the game plan was. And what he portrays in his book 1984 is a world divided into three major economic blocks. He called them Oceania, Asiana, and East Asiana. And each of these blocks, any two of these blocks would be at war with each other. And then there would be a peace or a victory, and then they'd ally with the other bloc, and then all of a sudden they'd be at war with another bloc. And in this way, they maintain the conflict that is necessary to perpetuate their profit and wealth and hence their control. And I think that we see that same game plan being implemented today. We already have the European Union. They're working very hard to create the North American Union. The South American Union has already been created recently and would be easy enough to roll into a total American Union. And, of course, then they would move on and they will eventually create an Asian Union. And that's going to be the easiest one for them to form because the Asian nations, and particularly China, are pyramids power societies. All of the power rests with the leadership, and everybody else just does whatever they're told. So all they'd have to do is buy up or partner up with the rulers of Asia, and they would have the Asian Union. That'll be real easy to form. The biggest stumbling block that they have had is the United States of America. And that's because we have a tradition of individual liberty and freedom. And we have a legal basis for this individual freedom and liberty called the Constitution of the United States and its attendant Bill of Rights. So they have, and then thirdly, we have guns. So yeah. We're a real problem. if we don't voluntarily go along with the program, and if we all decide we're not going to do this program, that we have the means to resist. So they have had to work very hard, and they have. They worked very consistently for the past 60 years or so to essentially destroy the national sovereignty of the United States of America. And we are at the cusp of losing that sovereignty through trade agreements, through NAFTA, through the North American Union, through United Nations and some of their programs. And, of course, we've seen a continuing assault on the Second Amendment. The only heartening thing that's come out in recent years was the recent decision by the Supreme Court where they finally came out and said, okay, the right of the Second Amendment states the right of the people to bear arms shall not be infringed. And, you know, how else do you interpret that? They had to say, well, that means that private citizens have the right to own guns. And so that's one bright spot, and hopefully we can use that right to defend our national sovereignty. but they are working hard in every at every level, education, religion, politics, you name it. They are working very hard to destroy the cohesiveness of the United States. And that's why, for example, look at the difference between the United States and World War II, when we still had segregation, we had lots of problems over here, and yet the president then, Franklin Roosevelt, said, the only thing we really have to fear is fear itself. And we're all Americans, and we can all band together, and we can resist this tyranny and this dictatorship of Nazi Germany, fascist Italy, and the militaristic Japan. And we did. Everybody pitched in, the greatest generation. And now compare that with today, where we have a president who says, well, be fearful. We've got terrorists, and they're all around us, unnamed terrorists. We don't know who they are. We don't know where they are. We can't seem to catch them. But they're all around, and you've got to give us all of your liberty so that we can protect you. But keep shopping. You know, be fearful, but keep shopping.
And we're going to ship all the jobs out of the country, but, you know, keep shopping.
That's right. That's
keep eating.
Right.
Just, keep paying your bills.
And if you don't have any money, just keep borrowing more, you know.
Yeah.
And I've told people before, when those Chinese soldiers arrive at your front door, they're not going to be there as conquering troops. They're going to be there with an eviction notice and a bill of sale that shows they own your property.
Yeah. Well, that's a reality that so few have awakened to right now, and it's quite possible, just because of all the obfuscation of the enormous, the gigantic debts that they have accrued behind our backs, which
that's
raises
right.
an issue. You're bringing up all these points of all these trade agreements and all these plans to merge countries together and stuff. And this is being done by criminals, literally criminals, acting under the color of authority.
That's true. And these criminals are the same families, the same secret societies, the same organizations who founded and funded Hitler in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
But at some point they decided they couldn't let Hitler win, because I think what happened was the Germans proved to be just a little bit too efficient. And they not only initially stopped communism, which was the game plan, but then they overran Europe, and they defeated the Low Countries and France, and they were threatening Britain. And at that point, these people who created them says, my God, we've created a Frankenstein monster, and we've got to band all the nations together to stop them, which they did. And I'm not saying that was a bad thing. I don't think any of us would want to be living in a German Nazi occupied United States. But what we lose sight of is that the very people who created that Nazi state went right on and then moved over here and began to create a national socialist state in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned Blair's work, 1984, under the pen name of George Orwell.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't he part of Tavistock? Wasn't he one of the, or wasn't he guided by Tavistock to actually write that piece?
Don't start me to lying. I can't say for sure that he was connected to Tavistock, although somehow I vaguely think that may be true. But I do know, though, that he was very well connected to the very socialist organizations, and like Tavistock,
mm-hmm.
whose game plan was to try to take socialism worldwide. And if you look today, look at President George W. Bush. He gets in office by proclaiming his compassionate conservatism. So he's a conservative, okay? And yet, I'm down here in Texas. Texas is full of conservatives. But what do these conservatives down here want? Well, they want a balanced budget, less federal government, secure borders, a support for family values, all the things that Bush talked about. But have we gotten any of that? No. Our borders are wide open. They still are. In fact, I would simply pose this question. How are we supposed to believe that there is a true international terrorist threat when they will not even secure the borders of our country?
Yeah, or even get the terrorists. They certainly can
argue the terrorists. So far, despite thousands of people that were rounded up and held without bail, held without habeas corpus, held without the right of an attorney, they've only had one conviction, and that was Missouri. And then now they've got the Osama bin Laden's driver, and he was tried by a military court, which you'd think that, you know, they would kangaroo that right on through, and yet that ended up in a split decision.
Was he driving him through the Tora Bora Mountains?
Anybody, really.
I think we're getting a delay here. I was going to ask, was his limousine driver driving him through the Tora Bora Mountains when they caught him, or?
I don't think so. I think he'd been a driver sometime in the past, and they were trying to pin him as, you know, some leader of the Al-Qaeda network. That's another thing, by the way. In my book, The Rise of the Fourth Reich, what you're going to find is that Al-Qaeda came out of the old Muslim Brotherhood. They had to change the name because the old Muslim Brotherhood had already been thrown out of Egypt back in the 1950s and could only find sanctuary in Saudi Arabia, which just happens to be the one country that is in tight business connections with the Bush family. And the old Muslim Brotherhood was a Nazi-infiltrated organization. That mm-hmm. back during World War II, our troops in North Africa had just about as much problem with the Arabs who were members of the Muslim Brotherhood as they did from the Nazi soldiers there.
Yeah. Why do you think, you think this is purely because of the propagandized media that the American people, with all this information that's coming out, with the hundreds of books that have been written, with the thousands and thousands, probably tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of talk shows where this was discussed, why aren't people waking up to this? Are we that dumbed down?
You hit the nail on the head, Don. I say it's largely because of the corporate mass media, okay, of which I was a part for many years. Mm-hmm. And the reason I say this is because, you know, in the Bible it says, seek the truth and you shall find it. But it didn't say turn on the television, somebody's going to give it to you. You got to go seek it. You got to read things. You got to read books. You got to go on the internet and surf through the sites and see what all these different people have to say and start thinking for yourself. But unfortunately, since the rise of television, that doesn't seem to be what's happening. Instead, people sit home, they turn on their TV, and they sit very passively while they are bombarded with information, statistics, propaganda, advertising, and they accept that as their reality. And since there are now five international corporations that control the mass corporate media, and when I say the media, I'm not just talking about the news media. I'm talking about everything you see and hear. Publishing, books, magazines, cable, billboards, movies, TV, cable, satellite, you name it. Five corporations control everything you see and hear.
And
that's
music.
Why I know it. And that's yeah. why people, thoughtful, intelligent, educated people who probably watch the 10 o'clock news every night and read their local newspaper and genuinely think that they are well informed, they are actually propagandized, and they are looking at the world only as the corporate masters of the corporate mass media want them to see it. And you could see, and once you understand this and back off, you can kind of begin to understand this. When we invaded Iraq, which was based on lies, it has now been documented, 395 lies that was loudly parroted by the mass media so that everybody just truly believed that Saddam Hussein was behind 9/11 and that the people over there really wanted him out of there and that he was somehow building a nuclear weapon and was going to have it within 6 months, and we had to invade that country to stop all that, and it all turned out to be just absolute lies. And but yet everybody believed that because that's all they heard in the mass media. And now today, as it began to all fall apart, instead of that concentrated propaganda washing over you from day to day, week to week, there was just bits and pieces. It came, the Downing Street memo came out, showed that they were fixing our intelligence around their policy, which was to invade Iraq. Then it came out with the our own weapons inspector, Scott Ritter. He said, well, I tried to tell him there were no weapons of mass destruction there. And then it comes out here. But it all dribbles out over a period of time, and unless you're really paying attention and thinking for yourself, you miss a lot of that, and you don't understand what's really going on.
Yes. Now, you're bringing up so many points here. I'm wondering where I should jump in.
Yeah, really, where do we go?
Well, I agree with you wholeheartedly. In fact, my listening audience, that my dedicated listening audience is saying, here's a guy that's saying the same thing Don says night after night. So, you know, I'm appreciative of what you're saying because I respect the work that you do and have accomplished, and I know that you're going to continue to do that. And it means a lot to me as a researcher to hear you say the same things.
Well, and let me tell you, here's what bothers me. According to McLean's magazine, my book, The Rise of the Fourth Reich, is already number 8 on the top 10 best-selling nonfiction books in Canada. Okay? So how come nobody over here hears about it? I'm on your program, I'm on one or two other programs talking, but you don't see any newspaper ads, you don't see any comment in the media. You don't see me on Bill O'Reilly. You don't see me on Oprah. You don't see me on this mass media because that's how they control it. It's not control of the information. Don, you research the same things I do, and you tend to come to the same conclusions because the information is simply there. But they control the distribution of the information. And if a person doesn't hear about it, then as far as they know, it doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm. And really, the word information is a misnomer, isn't it?
That's right. That's right. Information kind of indicates a wide spectrum of facts, statistics, and data, you know. But the information that we get over the mainstream corporate media is actually should be called more properly propaganda. And that is something, of course, that the German Nazis fully realize the importance of and the effectiveness of, and the very same techniques that they developed during the Third Reich are now being employed in the modern day American Fourth Reich. And let me quickly say that Reich is simply the German word for empire. Mm-hmm. And I don't think there's anybody who can dispute me when I say that America, the United States of America, has become the greatest empire in the country, in the world, especially since the collapse of communism in Soviet Russia. And so we are the new empire. We are the new Reich.
Yeah, there's also a second meaning for that word Reich, which means rich. So it's basically saying the same thing.
That's right. So when you say a Reich, I guess actually technically you could say that that means an empire of the rich and the wealthy. And anybody that doesn't believe that's what's happening in the United States of America, just go out and try to buy a home or try to get a job, and you'll find out, you know. The rich are getting richer, and the poor are getting poorer.
Yeah. Now, you haven't really answered the question that I asked before, but I'm not chastising you.
Who's at the top of the food chain?
We were going to talk about the food chain, and I wanted to mention something. You know, we have this this belief. I'm going to use the word belief, and we've been well indoctrinated into that regarding the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds, the Loebs, you know, Kuhn and Loeb, Harry Sachs, and
the Harrimans.
The Harriman brothers, George Herbert Walker, all of these philanthropists, these wonderful people, the Warburgs, who were working for the Rothschilds, the Bronfmans, the Lees, all the Illuminati families. I never hear anybody mention George Pizer or Daniel Pizer. George Pizer came to the United States and became George Bayshore. And he was the guy that started the railroads. He was the guy that owned Jekyll Island. He was the guy that made all these guys agents for him.
Uh-huh.
And,
well, and you don't hear much about J.P. Morgan, and he was also at the heart of all that.
Yes, yes.
It was Morgan people who, back in 1934, were all set to try to overthrow Franklin Roosevelt and install a military dictatorship in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
They made a big mistake, though, because they had recruited General Smedley Butler of the Marine Corps and was trying to groom him to be the new Fuhrer, the leader in the United States, and Smedley Butler played along with him for a little while to find out what the plan was, and then he went. They made a big mistake because it turned out he was a true patriot, and he went to Franklin Roosevelt and told him what was going on, and there was a little bit of a media revelations, and it all kind of fell apart.
Mm-hmm. When George V took office, we say took office. I'm speaking about King George V.
Well, he didn't
when he took
office,
the throne.
He assumed the crown.
Yeah, in 1910. Well, I'm speaking about the real King George, not the one in Washington.
Okay, right.
In 1910, he absolved the house, which was under the name Battenberg or Battenberg, and changed it to Mountbatten. And
which
created the House of Windsor. Now, to me, it seems as though they promoted, and I know Tavistock was behind the creation of Hitler and this whole Nazi machine.
Mm-hmm.
They orchestrated all of that.
And the British royalty at the beginning of World War II were all in favor of this. In fact, in my book, you'll read that just recently, within the past couple of years, there has been some documents that have been made public that showed that the British royals were perfectly okay with a Nazi occupation of England, as long as they guaranteed that the monarchy would be undisturbed.
Yes. The point I'm trying to make here is that that was sort of a smokescreen for their own German background.
Right, exactly.
Okay, and that has been at the crux of all of what's been going on. It's still there today. It was there when our country was actually founded. And
that's
this
right.
is why I referred to George Pizer, who was the French paymaster. And they brought him with the name change of George Bayshore, and he began building the railroads, even to the extent the land that they gave him extended 100 feet on each side of the railroad. How many houses in this country are within 50 feet of a railroad track?
A large number. And they're trying the same thing today with their NAFTA-inspired Trans-Texas Corridor, which is only the Texas leg of the Kennamex Superhighway that they're trying to run through. And, of course, what nobody is paying attention to is if they ever get that working, you know, it won't be just the mile-wide highway that bisects the United States. There will be areas of influence on either side of it that could extend up to 5-10 miles. So you can imagine if you had a 20-mile swath that went right up through the middle of the United States, just think of what that would do to us.
Yeah, and I've seen maps of all the extensions that run east and west and, you know, every which way.
And, of course, they have really been pushing that here in Texas as the Trans-Texas Corridor. Luckily, people have kind of wakened up down here, and they are now trying to say the Trans-Texas Corridor is a dead project, but I don't believe that. They'll just turn around, they'll call it something else, they'll put some new people in, change some names, and they will continue with this plan. It's really amazing. But it also shows that when they were trying to run this route up to the west of Dallas-Fort Worth, the people in my area got together and when they held public meetings, they showed up in Moss, and they said, no, we don't want this. And as a result, they had to change, and then they tried to run it around to the east side of Dallas, but the people in East Texas caught on, and they said, we don't want this either. So there are more of us than there are of them, we can defeat their plans, but you have got to educate yourself as to what's really going on. You cannot listen to the media. In fact, the media rarely talks about the Kanamek Superhighway, and when they do, they early on they tried to dispel that as some sort of myth. You know, well, that's not happening. Well, of course it is.
Yes, and they've given contracts to China to control certain aspects of it, if not all of it. And that's probably whether that's even a sincere agreement is in doubt, because they owe China trillions and trillions of dollars that they've either stolen or
that's the whole problem. We're in such debt to China that you know, they will just show up over here with repossession orders.
Mm-hmm. Now, after certain countries pulled out of this latest war in the Middle East, in particular in Iraq and Afghanistan, Spain, for example, is it ironic? Is it a coincidence that they had the Madrid bombings, or that they had this event that took place in London, or the Bali bombing? See, these were all the countries that were not supporting the war, basically, and
right.
And so these false flag events.
We see the same thing happening here in the run up to the hurried passage of the unread Patriot Act.
Yes,
and at that time, what happened was is that Congressman Daschle and a number of others who were all Democrats or all people who were opposed to our invasion of Iraq or to the Patriot Act, and they suddenly got anthrax letters in the mail, ended up killing seven people and hospitalizing two dozen more. And now they're trying to blame it on a dead scientist who, by all accounts, was harassed by the FBI, who then was brought in for psychiatric counseling and then died. And then they said, oh, well, we were getting ready to indict him because he did it all by himself. And despite the fact that his friends, neighbors, families, and coworkers said there's no way he could have done that.
And
again,
also,
false flag operation.
Yeah, didn't they even say he committed suicide?
Yes.
Yeah. It's,
right.
You know,
how convenient.
That's the real problem in society today. There's so many people being accused of crimes they didn't commit that we have a higher suicide rate than a death rate via suicide than we do heart disease or AIDS or cancer.
Right, right.
We should be.
It's simply amazing. And again, that goes back to Nazi methodology in Nazi Germany. If you became the least bit effective in trying to criticize or obstruct the march of the Nazis, well, then you disappeared or committed suicide.
Mm-hmm. There's one question I'd like to ask you, and I'm not sure if you cover this at all in your book, but there's, you know, the eugenics movement and the...
Oh, yes, I cover it quite extensively, because that is the eugenics movement, which today you don't hear. Eugenics has kind of become a dirty word, so now they call it other things. They call it Planned Parenthood and, you know, family management and all these nice little terms. And, of course, everything they do is to protect the children. It doesn't matter what's happening, it's to protect the children.
Even though the children are being picked up by pedophiles and taken to wild parties in Washington and
right.
and Lincoln, Nebraska. And, oh,
talking
about, man,
the Franklin cover-up, yes.
Yeah, exactly.
This needs serious investigation, and yet the media, corporate control media, will not even touch it. All we hear is about we hear all these attacks on the liberal media. Okay, well, let me tell you, folks, the liberal media is only as liberal as its conservative national socialistic masters allow it to be. And proof is this. Yes, they'll talk about hot button issues that get everybody stirred up. Same-sex marriage, abortion, these things, which are, in many cases, legitimate controversies. But they focus on that, which leads people to think that they're a liberal media. But you rarely hear about corporate misconduct in the so-called liberal media. And if you just think about it, if the liberals are the real cause of the problem, then you'd think they'd be raising Cain all the time about corporate malfeasance and corporate miscreants. But you never hear about that because they're all owned by these very same corporations.
Well, I have a lot of listeners and even my readers, a question that comes up often, and it's because of these revelations of these spies that are still alive after some of them are over 100 years old, and they say, how can they be doing this? How can they still be alive? They're trying to grasp reality. What can you add to the mix? Because I tell these people, look, they've been receiving DNA related treatment for years. This is what was going on maybe in the late 1920s, early 1930s, where they were toying with age regression technology. Can you add something to that?
Well, only the fact that in the broadest general terms that the Nazis in pre-war and wartime Germany were almost light years ahead away from the rest of the nations in science and technology. We know they had flying saucers. We know they had ball lightning called the Kugelblitz. They had a thing called the Bell, Die Glocke, that they were working on that was counter-rotating vortex energy fields that could cancel out gravity, that could affect the basic DNA. And this, by the way, the Bell probably was, that the Germans were working on was probably the same type technology that relates to the Philadelphia experiment. So they were working with these energy fields, and that was in during World War II, so you can imagine how advanced they are today. And yes, this is something that has always struck me. If they came to a very prominent and wealthy American and said, we want you to, you know, join us, and we want to run the world, I think that many of them probably would go, well, now, wait a minute, I'm an American first, and I'm not sure I want to join in on all that. But if they were approached and told, listen, we have the technology, and we can extend your life for another 100 years or more, that would be very, very enticing for someone to go along with their program.
Well, I'm, you know, you're basically saying the same thing that I tell the folks that are asking me these questions. I let them know, look, this technology has been there for a long time. You haven't heard about it because they don't want us to know about it. It's pure and simple.
That's very true.
There has
and,
been.
By the way, in pre-war Nazi Germany, a Dr. Otto Warburg, who, yes, was one of the members of the famous Warburg family, was working on a cure for cancer and claimed that he had it and that they could cure cancer. Well, of course, if they could cure cancer, then chances are they could also create it. And today, of course, it just seems like that every time you get someone who looks like they might become a very prominent leader of some sort, then they suddenly develop cancer and they die. Now, I know this sounds like sheer paranoia to some people, but you have to study the evidence. You have to study the technologies, and it's there.
Mm-hmm. And there are very few of these elite who, even when they disclose that they may have cancer, whether or not that's actually true, let's take Arlen Specter. You know, he recently went through, it appears he went through chemotherapy. Or maybe they just shaved his head to make it look like he went through chemotherapy and actually gave him a cure. Maybe he wasn't going along with the program, and so they cancered him. And then
they have all kinds of ways of keeping people in check. The leading proponent of the Trans-Texas Corridor, which is the Texas leg of the Kennemex Superhighway, was the governor down here, Rick Perry. And yet, when the people began to turn against it, and he realized that he was trying to go against the wishes of the vast majority of Texans, he began to waffle a little bit and kind of back off of his support for the Trans-Texas Corridor. And what happened after that? The governor's mansion in Austin was firebombed. And the police said that they thought it was politically motivated, but of course they tried to say it was somebody who, you know, was a liberal or some radical or whatever. And yet when you look even closer, you find that all of the electronic surveillance had suddenly gone down that night, and some of the guards were suspiciously not there, and whoever it was that got onto the grounds and firebombed the governor's mansion got away clean. Nobody's been caught or prosecuted for that, and yet Rick Perry is now back on board trying to push the Trans-Texas Corridor.
Mm-hmm. You don't think it was the Texas duck hunter that was behind that, do you?
No, probably not. But then, you know, as you have to watch out for those hunters, too. You know, just ask Dick Cheney's lawyer friend.
Yeah.
And that's what gets me. People say, well, you know, you're talking like that there are American leaders who would harm other Americans. I say, well, Dick Cheney shot his lawyer in the face with a shotgun, and the lawyer apologized.
Yeah. You know, there was a fire, I don't know if you heard about this, a few months back there was a fire in the old executive office building where Cheney had an office. In fact, his office was set on fire. And there was also one in the White House. Again, Cheney's wing of the White House.
Well, I think there's some interdicting warfare going on, even between, you know, these secret society people, and there's all kinds of stuff. Need I mention the missing nuke, you know, where they had six nuclear weapons being flown across the country, and they said, well, that was just a slip-up by the military. Well, let me tell you something. I was in the military. I was in military intelligence. You don't move a nuclear weapon unless there's thousands and there's hundreds of precautions on that, and you have to have everything signed in triplicate before you do something like that. So that you don't just make mistakes like that. There's something going on. There's a lot of activity going on under the table that, of course, is not being reported on by the corporate mass media.
Mm-hmm. And now you're speaking about the plane that had the six nukes armed.
Right.
They could have been dropped from the plane, in other words. I mean,
that's right. Or they were on the way to the base in Louisiana, which was the jumping off point for the Middle East. They could have been trying to ship some nukes over to the Middle East to use on Iran or in Iraq. But apparently there are people who are blowing the whistles who are trying to stop some of this stuff. But
yeah,
of course,
now,
you don't ever hear about that.
Yeah, you're referring to Barksdale Air Force Base. And now, there is it a coincidence that I heard it was somewhere between 4 and 8 people immediately after that investigation began that died?
Yes, and that's absolutely true, because I have in my files the mainstream media reports on some of these airmen, some of these pilots who were connected to those two bases, and they turned up dead. You know, killed in a car crash, or they fell off something or another. You know, it's I don't know. There's something going on there, and we are not getting the straight of it.
Yeah, and the cover story was that they were supposed to be taking that to Texas. Those missiles were to be disarmed.
Yeah, that,
you know,
was
it doesn't
the cover
make sense.
Story. No, it doesn't.
You know, it doesn't wash it. You know, it's just more.
But see, that's the thing today, Don. They have become so arrogant in their power, these national socialists that are now trying to run the United States, that it's almost to the point to where they don't care whether we know what's going on or not. They tell us the most outrageous stories. For example, the D.C. madam who was running the call girl ring, okay, that they busted the governor of New York, Elliot Spitzer. They got him on that just a few weeks after he had written a opinion piece for the Washington Post showing how it was the Bush administration that was responsible for the collapse of the mortgage home industry, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, why he thought he could publish something like that and still be going to see his cargo girlfriends and that they weren't going to do anything to him is beyond me, but they certainly pulled the plug on him, and he had to resign. And then the madam who's in charge of the cargo ring goes on public on radio and says that some of her girls also heard overheard some of the inside story on what really happened and who was really behind 9/11. And then she also said that she would not commit suicide, and yet she turned up, found hanged in her apartment. They said, well, she committed suicide, and everybody went, well, okay. How blatant is that?
Mm-hmm. And I heard this through multiple sources. I think Wayne Madsen had written a really powerful piece on that, that she had names, big, big names, in that little black book of hers.
Uh-huh. Which has never come to light, right? We don't know where the black book is. It disappeared.
Well, it probably landed somewhere near Mohammed Atta's passport.
Yeah, that was conveniently found in the streets of New York following the collapse of the World Trade Center towers. And there again, see, look how blatant they are. These planes hit those towers with such force and created such a firestorm, it just melted the plane, it melted everything, melted the steel supports of those buildings, and they all just fell down. But we found the paper passport. Give me a break.
Mm-hmm. Well, it blew out the window right before the building fell, you know.
Exactly. And it's the same thing as the Pentagon. Oh, yeah, it was a big Boeing 757 that hit the Pentagon, but it just burst into flame with such intensity that it just liquefied, disintegrated the airplane. Okay, so that's why there's no pieces anywhere. And we can't show you a picture of the wreckage. We can't show you those 6-ton engines of titanium steel. We can't show you those wheel assemblies because it just all melted and went away. But we know that that's what happened because we identified the victims in those planes by their fingerprints.
Mm-hmm.
What? The plane, all the steel, aluminum, and titanium steel melts, but the fingerprints are okay. Come on, folks, use your head.
They said they identified bodies by DNA testing. Can you imagine
right.
that?
It was, early on, they said it was the fingerprints.
Yeah.
Oh, come on.
Yeah,
we've just got to start using our head and quit listening to the corporate media.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you. In light of, there's one more thing I wanted to bring up. I don't know if you've heard anything about this, but I did a show on this actually last night. I had Don Harkins, the publisher, editor, my publisher at the Idaho Observer. I had him on for a good 40 minutes last night talking about the Olympics in China. You know, we've got this 888 starting date at 808.
Uh-huh.
And there is some information that came out from Dr. Truat, and he produced a DVD, which is available through the $1DVDproject.com. It's a 2-hour expose on their plans to start this pandemic again, bird flu, and there's the Spanish flu, and they're going to use the Olympics. What the information he has is that they're going to use the Olympics as the staging ground to kick this thing off. In other words, they may not inject the actual participants of the Olympics, but anyone who goes there may be forced under threat of quarantine or refusal to allow them to board a plane until they get an injection. And as you well know, vaccines are really the disease itself that they're supposed to
protect.
That's right. So,
well, see, if you know anything, you know that a vaccine is the disease, lessened to the point to where supposedly your body will build a resistance against it. So, yeah, when they give you a vaccine, essentially they're giving you the disease.
Well, when they're giving these vaccines to soldiers and they're dying, some of them within hours or days of the vaccine, there's obviously something terribly wrong. And these are
that
being manufactured
absolutely true.
China.
And think about this. If that's the plan and if that is carried out, then how easy is it going to be for them to say, well, gee, that all came out of China, and everybody gets upset, and immediately we got a whole new enemy now, China.
Mm-hmm. And really, China's part of the whole game. I mean,
oh, yeah.
you know, this script that they've been following for hundreds of years that, and I'm not just speaking about the Cold War, but every war was started under false pretenses just to make money for the military-industrial complex and allow these people to go in there and rape and pillage everything.
That's true. And if you'll go and look up Carol Rosin, R-O-S-I-N, who was a high official at Fairchild Industries and worked back in the 70s with very closely with Wernher von Braun, a highly decorated Nazi rocket scientist who then came over and pretty much put together our early space program. And he told her back in the 70s that you always have to have a manufactured enemy. And back then, the enemy was the communist. He said, but it's all phony. He said, and when the communist threat doesn't work anymore, it's going to be international terrorists, probably from Middle Eastern countries. Whoops, here we are. Here's what we got right now. And he said, after that, he said, when that doesn't work anymore, it's going to be a threat from space. He said, but don't believe it. It's not true.
Yeah. Well, they're already here. I'm sure you would agree. It's
oh, yeah. But they've been here for thousands of years. I actually held a class on UFOs at the University of Texas at Arlington for a few years. And one of the first things I did was give a class assignment. I said, go out and come back to class next week prepared to give an example of a UFO incident or experience that occurred before the year 1900. And they'd all look at me very puzzled because I think they, like most people, thought it all started with Roswell or 1947 or the 50s with the UFO flyover Washington, D.C. But when they came back, they were just all jumping up and down because they found that UFO reports go all the way back and predate the Bible. So they've been here all along. And if their objective was to blow us up or eat us, they would have done it a long time ago. So that's not the plan. So anyone who tells you that the ETs, extraterrestrials, are here and they're our enemies, you better think twice because that's probably just somebody, you know, that they're creating another outside enemy so they can gain more power and control.
Well, when you mentioned before 1900, the first thing that came to mind was your work on the Aurora Texas case in 1899. So,
right, and I'm not really at liberty to give any details, but I have been working with a television program which will be airing before too long, and they have done an incredibly well-mounted scientific investigation into the Aurora spaceship crash of 1897, and all I'm going to tell you is that they are proving up that that was an actual event that did in fact occur 6 years before the Wright brothers flew.
Now, I think I saw your presentation. I think you gave that presentation for one of the crash retrieval conferences.
That's correct.
A few years ago that Ryan and Robert Wood, Dr. Robert Wood, sponsored.
That's right. I had some pretty good evidence to support the Aurora spaceship crash of 1897 even then, but they've taken it even further.
Yeah. You had mentioned something that I can't recall if I brought this up, but you were talking about the nurses in the hospital having visions of short people walking through the certain wings of the hospital.
Oh, yes. You're talking about the alien ghost at the hospital out in Roswell, which at the time had been the Roswell Army Air Corps hospital, which, according to all the accounts, is where they took these dead and or injured aliens that were recovered in 1947 at the Roswell crash. And twice now, I've been back to that hospital and interviewed nurses and maintenance people and hospital officials, and they all say that for years there have been these reports of people seeing this small, diminutive figure stalking the halls of this hospital late at night. Lights go off and on, elevators go up and down, there's nobody there, And the people who've actually seen this entity say it's very short with a great big head and great big dark eyes, which is, you know, pretty much the common description of what they call the little alien grays. So that to me was incredible when I first heard about that. I said, wait a minute, an alien ghost in this Roswell hospital. But we actually went out there with a film crew, and we did record on video some very strange phenomena. And these people are all good people, and they all say the same thing. So there's something going on there, but of course nobody gets to hear about that much.
Yeah, what I picked up, and I wanted to mention this to you, is as I was listening to you talk about that and describe it in the manner, I tuned into it right away from a metaphysical perspective. And and it occurred to me that there was, it's difficult to put this into words because we tend to think that a ghost is a spirit, but I see something, sort of a trans, dimensional thing, characteristic going on. These beings are trapped in between, a multiverse, and they're coming in and out of that space. That's a little out there, I realize, for the listener.
No, but I wouldn't argue with you on that, because we just really, that's getting into areas that we just really don't, our scientific knowledge has not quite got us to the point of truly understanding all that. But what I'm beginning to understand is that just like UFO technology and propulsion, it's all based on the manipulation of energy.
And time.
And energy is the basic underlying foundation of the entire universe.
Yeah.
All matter, I mean, the chair that you're sitting in may seem very solid to you, but yet in your intellectual mind you realize it's made up of nothing but atoms. And atoms are, you know, 98% empty space, you know, with a little bitty nucleus and some electrons revolving around it. So if you could learn to manipulate energy at that level, then you're on to a lot of different dimensions and a lot of different levels of life that we just don't really know about, because we're kind of stuck on this material three-dimensional plane.
Absolutely, I agree 100%. Now there are, I know people who have seen grays walk through the walls, walk through doors, walk through solid objects.
And so people
they
say,
have that.
Well, that's impossible. How could they do that? Well, if you can manipulate energy, then you can simply slide your atoms in through those atoms, and you just, you know, you walk through empty space, which is what everything basically is.
Yes. So that's an interesting concept. Now, we've got politicians that are doing that, but they do it via phony paperwork, name changes, fictitious birth dates, and
right. Well, you know, here's the basic problem, Don. What state are you in right now?
I'm in Ohio.
Ohio. Okay. Let's say that
you did mean my physical location.
Yeah, I didn't mean the state of the United States, not your physical or mental state.
Okay. Because I was going to say
let's say I've got Jim Mars
on my show.
Here's the problem. Okay, let's say the Akron police become corrupt, okay? Well, what do? We call the state, Ohio State Police. And they would come in and they would investigate, and if there were charges to be brought, they'd bring them, and essentially and hopefully they would clean up the situation. Now, what if the Ohio State Police becomes corrupt and is committing criminal acts? What do you do then? Well, you'd go
call,
to the FBI.
You'd have to call in Blackwater at
yeah,
that point.
Right. No. Most everybody thinks that you go to the FBI. And the FBI would come in and investigate, and they would clean it up. But now, what happens if the FBI becomes corrupt and involved in criminal activities? We're back to a situation here of who will watch the watchers.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, we've got a real problem here, and the only solution would be a hard-hitting, investigative news media. But we don't have that, do we? We have five corporations, multinational corporations, that control everything we see and hear. This is where the control comes from, and this is what's going to be a very tough nut to crack.
So are you saying we can't call Rupert Greenberg? Oh, excuse me, I meant to say Murdoch.
Don't be talking about my boss now.
Well, yeah.
Because Murdoch owns HarperCollins, which owns William Morrow, which is the publisher of The Rise of the Fourth Reich.
Oh, that's your boss, really. But
the
truth is the truth. What am I supposed to say? Well,
but
I'm not trying.
To his credit, this book is out. Rule by Secrecy is out, you know. In fact, here's what's interesting. Rupert Murdoch, regardless of what you want to think about him, his two publishing houses in the United States, HarperCollins and William Morrow, are about the only two major publishers in the United States that are not owned or controlled by the German corporation Bertelsmann. Bertelsmann, out of Germany, is the largest publisher in the English language. They own publishing houses like Ballantine, Random House, Del Rey, very well-known publishers, and they're all owned by Bertelsmann. And yet Bertelsmann, during World War II, is the largest publisher of Nazi propaganda for the German Wehrmacht.
Yeah.
Holy camoly. In fact, look at, you know, if you want to argue with me and say we're not the new Fourth Reich, I would simply point out that we have a president whose grandfather was actually prosecuted by the federal government of the United States for being a supporter of the Nazis. We have a governor of the most populous state in the United States, California, Arnold Schwarzenegger, whose father was a Nazi party official. And we have a pope who, as a young boy in Poland, was a member of the Hitler Youth.
Mm-hmm.
Holy cow! you know, need I say more?
Well, I'm not trying to get you in trouble with your boss. I was going to bring up the fact that I heard he was recently sort of approached and threatened about keeping certain stories quiet.
Well, I wouldn't doubt that a bit. And I guess time will only tell if he caves into that kind of pressure or if he stands his ground.
Yeah. Well, see, he owns the Wall Street Journal now, and And is it the Dow Jones also?
I think so.
Okay. So you're talking about quite a bit of power there now. How does one acquire so much power and still be in the game? If I'm to trust what you're saying, and I have no reason to mistrust you, is he taking a stand against this to some extent to what's going on? Or,
well,
I know that's a difficult question.
I really don't know,
answer.
But like I said, he owns the company that has published The Rise of the Fourth Reich. So read that book and tell me if you think that, you know, it's all under total control. By the way, the five corporations that control everything you see and hear are Time Warner, Inc., Walt Disney Company, Viacom, Vivendi Universal, News Corporation, and Bertelsmann.
Yeah, that's it.
And they've got it all. They've got TV, radio, talk shows. They've got billboards, satellite, cable, movies, magazines, newspapers. You name it. There's very, very little that you can in mainstream America that you can see or read or hear that is not controlled by these five multinational corporations.
And it's got to go beyond that into the production companies, you know, the post-production houses, the casting agencies.
Well, they don't really have to go much past that, because I can tell you from my own personal experience that if you go to one of the, say, the cable channels like that a lot of people listen to, like Discovery, A&E, okay, and you say, hey, I've got this tremendous idea. I want to do a program on UFOs. And what you're going to hear is, well, yeah, we might accept a program like that, but only if you make fun of it and debunk it. That's how they've maintained this control over that issue for so many years.
Yeah, Larry King does the same thing on CNN, and
right.
he brings the most ridiculous debunker you could bring to the table.
But see, that's an interesting phenomenon, and keep in mind and think back, Don, that's only begun to happen this year, following the UFO experience down in Stephenville, Texas. And that's in the wake of what happened last November at Gate 17 at O'Hare Airport. I think they realized that they're not going to be able to keep the lid on this much longer because they have no control over what they do. So I think the decision has been made to go ahead and start opening up and bring a little bit more truthful information to the public. And that's why we've seen several really good Larry King shows and some other programs that are beginning to kind of crack through this stone wall of silence and this embargo on UFO information. But now, this leads me to a point I want to make, because this actually now becomes even more dangerous to us, because, again, harking back to what Wernher von Braun said, that the next perceived threat would be a threat from space. Now, just stop and think about it a minute. How can they convince everybody to be terrified of a threat from space when they have, for 60 years, they've been trying to tell everybody there's nothing out there, it doesn't exist, there's no UFOs, it's only Venus or swamp gas, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, you're speaking about a hologram then, right?
Yeah, no. I'm just simply saying that what they have to do now is reverse their conditioning process and say, yes, there really is something out there, so that when they get ready to play their whole card, the threat from space, you know, oh, wow, they really are here, and they want to eat us or whatever, and you have to give up the last of your individual liberties and rights so that we can protect you. How are they going to make that work if nobody believes there's anything out there? So we're in a conditioning process right now, and you're going to see more and more movies and more TV shows and more even news programs that are going to be giving more truthful information about the UFO issue, and more people will finally come to understand that it is a reality. They really are there. And then once that point has been reached, when enough people understand and believe that they really are out there, then they'll play this, well, they're going to get you, they're evil, they're bad, and alien threat is at orange level today, that kind of thing. Okay.
Well, yeah,
and it's
going to
be phony.
Premise,
it's going to be phony. We have to start trying to spread the word that this is the plan, so that when they start playing that, enough people will go, nah, I don't think so.
Well, I would think if that were to happen, that Osama bin Laden could take care of them for us.
That's true. Nope. That's true. He would emerge from his cave and say, actually, I'm a reptilian shapeshifter or something. I don't know. They'll come up with something.
Oh, my God.
Because they're always, Don, I think you'll agree with me. These people that we're talking about, these people at the very top of the food chain who control these multinational corporations, who control the monopolies in energy, pharmaceuticals, transportation, communications, you know, they may be murderous. They may even be criminals, but they're not stupid, okay?
Yeah.
So they have access to the think tanks and the institutes, and they know exactly which buttons to push to stampede the human herd.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I would agree with you. Yes, wholeheartedly.
Okay, yeah.
Wholeheartedly.
So it's up to us to start wising up, so that we don't stampede every time they yell fire.
Yeah, well, I would. I think that would start appropriately with someone getting your book, The Rise of the Fourth Reich, and reading your research there, or any of your books for that matter, because, yes, you have discussed this issue many times on many other shows as well. And
that's true. In fact, anybody who's listening, if this is maybe your first encounter with trying to seriously think about UFOs or extraterrestrials or whatever, then I would encourage you to get my book, Alien Agenda, which was published way back in 1997, but it's as valid today as it was then. And in fact, it has become the top-selling nonfiction book about UFOs in the world. It's been translated into about a dozen languages.
Well, that's marvelous. And if you need someone to help you spend that money, let me know.
Hey, let me tell you something. That's another myth, okay? You've always heard of rich and famous, right, Don?
Yeah.
Okay, but see, they never tell you about just famous.
Well, maybe you should give me your boss's number, and I'll call him and recommend you get a raise. How's that?
There you go. Maybe he could channel off a few of those gazillions he makes every year and maybe give me a little portion.
Well, maybe he could give you some of what Bill O'Reilly's making.
I wish that I could get about 10% of what Rush Limbaugh is going to get. He just signed a contract for $400 million. Can you believe that? This drug-addled idiot who spews out all this one-sided tripe, you know, and never allows anyone with any sense to offer any criticisms or any counterbalance on his programs, and it's nothing but sheer propaganda, but he gets $400 million. Whoa!
Well, That sort of points directly to the fact that he's serving an agenda. He's not serving the people. He's serving their interests. And he's doing it well.
That's right.
And I guess he's performing a real
service for them. He keeps a wide swath of the population just totally bedazzled, hypnotized, and you know, I can't tell you how many people I try to engage in a meaningful conversation, and all they can do is just quote from him, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
They're just, I don't know. And, of course, back to the topic at hand, it just kind of reminds me of all those Germans during World War II, you know, when Hitler would scream at them, and they'd all just go, Sieg Heil, Sieg Heil, Sieg Heil. They just, you know, by rote, they went right along.
Yeah.
Well, listen, I think we've gone over our time. This has been great, but I'm going to have to go hit the hay.
Well, I was about to say, we've run out of time, actually. It's been a pleasure, and I want to thank you for all your information. I want to let everyone know they can visit Jim Marrs' website by merely going to jimmarrs.com. That's JIMMARRS. JimMarrs.com. Have your sound turned up when you go on the homepage. make sure you do that. You're in for a treat.
And, all right, Don. Thank you so much. And for all those listening, man, just get a copy of The Rise of the Fourth Reich and give it a read. And if you can refute my evidence, then I'm the first one to want to hear about that. But I think you're going to find that it's going to be a real eye-opening adventure for you.
Yeah, and Jim, I want to let the listening audience know that you're going to be on later on this month. So check out the schedule on directlightproductions.com. We're hoping to have it up on the BBS site, too. We've been working through some software issues there. And I'm supposed to post Jim's book on my site, which I have not done yet, but I'm going to do that and actually get all his books up there so you can peruse them if you're on my site. And I'm looking forward to your next visit, and I wish you the best of luck. Thank you so much for being on the show, and thank you for what you're doing. Also, stay posted for my Obama article, which is coming out.
Okay, I'll be looking for it.
Part three of the Three Stooges Go to Washington. You're going to find it very intriguing, I think. So
great. Okay, well, we'll be talking later in the month.
Okay, I'm looking forward to it. And let's say goodnight to our listening audience. You have been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com. Our special guest, Jim Marrs, will be with us again. Visit his site at jimmarrs.com. And please get his books. Read up
Thank
on
you.
It.
Thank you. Good night.
And we'll talk to you later now, okay? In the meantime,
bye.
Folks, be with us again. I've got a couple of more great shows. I've got George Green coming on tomorrow night, and scientist Jim Murray. Now, George was on a couple of weeks ago, and I got a lot of email about his message. You can go to nomorehoaxes.com and read. You can actually, for free, download three PDF documents that he has there that talk about the coming changes in our reality. And I recommend that highly, that you take a look at that and consider that. And George will be with us tomorrow, Jim Murray on Friday. In the meantime, I want to thank Don Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, and Seth Hendrick on the sound. And I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.